I wonder if you have ever felt stomach turning, heart stopping grief, an emptiness that feels like a sucking wound in your chest. I wonder what it feels like to feel that emptiness in your very bones. I believe that Naomi knows how that feels. I believe that many of us can identify with her and with Ruth, who have lost loved ones and who have felt a vast emptiness. Grief is one of those emotions that we all experience, and yet we all experience differently. Even Ruth and Naomi have different responses to their own grief. Naomi experiences doubt and anger at God, and Ruth throws herself into a fierce devotion to what she has left. Naomi tries to protect her daughter-in-law by sending her away, but Ruth clings to her. Ruth remains a model of devotion and commitment. And later interpreters even say that her devotion to Naomi is like God's devotion to us. Even though this story was written at least 2,500 years ago, grief and friendship are emotions that we share with these women. We may also recognize, with surprise and a little bit of anxious joy, the way in which Ruth and Naomi's emptiness is, over time, transformed into an unlikely fullness. They arrive empty-handed in Bethlehem, and Ruth gathers leftover grain in the field of Boaz, who is a distant kinsman. This is the one thing that is allowed to them as widows. And Ruth is such a hard worker that Boaz takes notice of her and pledges to protect her. Eventually, Ruth and Boaz fall in love, and they are married, and Ruth has a son. That son becomes the father of Jesse, and Jesse becomes the father of David, and David becomes king. These women who showed up in abject poverty are restored to their community and their clan, held up by the other women of the village, and they rejoice in the gift of a child. Their story is a beautiful example of how God makes a promise to us to not leave us, to be devoted to us, even in our emptiness, to cling to us even though we don't believe that we are worth it, to believe in us even though we doubt and fear. This book makes the claim that God's love is like that our love for each other can be like that. But, like all Old Testament stories, there's a little bit of a underbelly to this one. And I'm sorry, I know at least one of these days you'd like to come to church and hear about a hero that actually has wonderful virtue and never makes any mistakes. But unfortunately, or perhaps blessedly, the Bible doesn't tell stories about perfect, simple, or one-dimensional people. Some of you might see nothing wrong with what we just read today, especially compared to what we read last week with the tent peg and all that. And some of you might have been downstairs for our meeting with Rabbi Chaim Herring and might know a little bit of how Ruth gets Boaz to marry her. You see, the way that Ruth and Naomi secure the marriage to Boaz is slightly scandalous. After noticing that Boaz takes kindly to Ruth, the two of them concoct a plan. It relies on a surprise visit in the middle of the night after a lot of wine, and an ancient law called levirate marriage, in which the next of kin of a dead man is responsible for marrying his wife and essentially being the dead man to her and providing children in his name. This might make us wonder, do we really want to identify with these characters? Or can I trust these characters, knowing how they act later in the story? Or you even may be wondering, this book has plot lines that are so far from my own culture that I can't really understand why this should matter to me at all. And I can't tell you what to think about what Ruth and Naomi do. But what I can say is that a story like this makes a weird and powerful claim about God. And that really does matter to us today. You see, the Old Testament is full of stories like this. Tamar tricks Judah into giving her a child and saves Judah's line. Shiprah and Puah, the midwives in Egypt, defy the Pharaoh and protect the Hebrew babies. Miriam tricks the Pharaoh's daughter into paying Moses' own mother to raise him. And Zipporah saves Moses' life on the way back to Egypt. And Deborah and Jael, well, you heard about that last week. In this great story of God's relationship with God's people, the strong are always becoming the weak. The weak are always becoming the protectors. And the virtuous are never quite on target. And the flawed ones are the ones that God chooses. The powerful women remain nameless, and the working, defiant, resourceful women are remembered forever. The story of Ruth and Naomi is a story of great devotion, of loving kindness, of faith, and of God's promise to take on our emptiness and transform it into fullness. It is an example of how our relationships can transform our lives and how God's love lives in our devotion to each other. It is also a story about two women who are hungry and poor and the lengths that they will go in order to survive. It is that part of the story that makes the radical claim that this God is interested in the lives of the poor, the lives of the unseen, the lives of the forgotten. This is a God who understands how emptiness drives a hungry person, because this God cares that much, because this God has made a promise, because this God came to earth and lived our own grief-filled, hungry, empty, poor, and painful lives, and personally chooses to carry that with us. That our God is that devoted to us, that is a scandalous story. That our God is also that devoted to the people that we have forgotten or written off, that is a scandalous story. And so in the time remaining, I would like to invite us into a spiritual practice together. I want you to imagine yourself experiencing that emptiness. You can draw yourself to a time when you experience grief or loss or fear. And you don't have to open up all those feelings right now, but maybe just a little, just enough that you know what Naomi might be feeling like at the beginning of this story. And now, the God who came to be with us in that emptiness walks in front of you. Jesus of Nazareth is healing those around you. He approaches you and sees you. He takes your hands in a greeting, or maybe he hugs you, and he speaks with you kindly. If you are angry, that doesn't bother him. If you are broken, he doesn't fault you for that. He holds your hands. He says to you that what you need to hear then and now to make peace with yourself. Feel the warmth of those hands and the sense of security from them. And as you imagine what this conversation might be like, I invite you to respond with a Celtic encircling prayer that we have been praying together. I place my hands in yours, Lord. I place my will in yours, Lord. I place my thoughts in yours, Lord. I place my heart in yours, Lord. I place my hands in yours, Lord. Amen.